Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast brought to you by King Size Laundry at Harvey Norman. With all the king size capacity models from all the big brands. Visit online or in store.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Brendan Favola. I love a good Olympic story and there is no better than this. Earlier on this morning, Australian time, the men's 20K race has been run and won. First China, second China, third a gentleman by the name of Dane Bird Smith, a good Aussie lad who is on the bus now on the way to his medal ceremony. Good morning from Melbourne. Good evening to you, Dane. How are you?
Hey, mate. Yeah, I'm absolutely stoked. Just on the bus over to the medal ceremony now.
I'm stoked that you're stoked. Our producer MJ said you were the most excited man in the world, and I absolutely love that. Before we get too far into the details, tell us about the race, mate, and congratulations on being an Olympic bronze medalist.
Cheers, mate. Yeah, the race was unbelievable. Going into it, I knew I was in great form, so I just wanted to put it all together. And I knew the boys that I had to chase were the Chinese guys. They've been on form all season, so they were the ones I was after. Just watched them carefully. A couple other things unfolded through the race, a couple breakaways and stuff. But no, my attention was squarely on those Chinese blokes. So once they made their move, I tried to latch onto the back, but man, they've got some speed on them. So that's basically how I did. But the last 3K, I was just hanging on for dear life.
Dane, must have been a wonderful feeling when you saw the finish line. Unusually, you finished on the beach. What a great experience.
Yeah, it was absolutely magical little spot. Beautiful little island next to us and the whole beach that was there. So, when I was finishing, it was just unbelievable. I had had this Brazilian bloke coming up behind me just absolutely charging, and the whole crowd was on his side. But, I've spoken about it a few times now. I had my crew here. I had quite a few of my family over. So, yeah, they just pulled me through, man.
Now, mate, talking about your family, reports coming out of Brazil that your old man might have got detained by the police when he tried to get involved in your celebrations. Is this a true story or not?
Yeah. Actually, he did. So we're just putting it down to that, the classic dad. he was going nuts with the last final 900 when he gave me his, because he was on the drink station. And then obviously from the drink station to the final finish, he left his accreditation or whatever behind, and the security there, they're full on over here in Rio. They've done an absolutely amazing job by keeping all safe. But yeah, the bloody wobbly's gone and got himself picked up by the cops, but they're sorted it all out, and he'll be down at the medal ceremony to celebrate then.
That could possibly be, Dane, the best story of the Olympics to date. Your old man, or the wobbly as you call him, getting locked up. Now tell us, phenomenal, and I love when the athletics starts. It's my favourite part of the Olympics. What do you average per kilometre time-wise for the 20K walk?
Well, today was a PB for me, so I had no idea until about like 10 minutes after the race when I saw the times closing up. But yeah, big PB by 1 second.
Right.
But I average around about 3:57 a kilometre.
A kilometre. All right, I got to ask you, how do you not break into a run, Dane? When you're going at under 4 minute Ks, the Chinese are stretching you. Does your mind ever just snap and say, I just want to break into a jog and pass these blokes?
No. Look, it's been drilled into us for years and years of training. I mean, I was calculating just over the last 9 months in preparation for Rio, I've done around about 3,600 kilometres of walking. So it is ingrained to a T, and the only way to go faster is just to pick up the cadence with the legs. But so today was about 15.2 kilometres per hour for the whole thing as an average.
It's phenomenal, mate. It blows my mind that you do under 4 minute Ks when you're walking. Before we let you go, and I know you're on the way to the medal ceremony, how do you celebrate once everything is done and dusted?
Oh, mate, once I get that medal around my neck, I'm going straight over to family, and we're just going to go chill out somewhere, find a nice little bar or something, and just, maybe think of you, but I've got to keep it tidy because we got interviews the next morning.
Yeah, you want to be careful. Whatever you do, if someone hands you a caipirinha, don't drink it, Dane, because if you have a couple of those, you will not be doing any interviews for about a week. Mate, congratulations. Absolutely stoked for you, and I'm stoked for your old man too, that he got that excited that he just about got arrested.
Yeah, well, I'll be able to celebrate with him in a bit, but hope he enjoyed his trip down to the cop shop. So
you've given us all a thrill. Congratulations, Dane. Thanks for having a chat with us.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thanks very much.
And that was Dane Bird-Smith. What a legend. Third place, a bronze medal in the 20K walk. Mark Howard, Brendan Favola on the Dead Set Legends on Triple M. Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Brendan Favola all happening. We've got football going on. The Olympics are happening as we speak. But now we are going to be joined by one of my favourite athletes, absolute superstar, this lady. And she's going into a whole new area of her life. Her name is Sally Fitzgibbons. She is a champion surfer. She joins on the line now. Hello, Sal.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
Yeah, great to speak to you. You're up and about as you always are. So much to discuss in the world of surfing. But firstly, Fitzgibbons International. You're owning your own company now, Sal. You've got to put on a surfing event in Sydney. Tell us about it. Great news.
We are super excited. Myself and the team at Fitzgibbons International will be hosting our first ever event. So we're going to be heroing the Sydney International, which is the women's QS 6000 event. And then, but more so, it's just going to be a beach festival like no other. So we're just kind of championing the healthy lifestyle and surf culture within Australia. And there's going to be like running, the swimming. There's going to be a lot going on the Iron Woman. There's going to be people in the park working out. So you guys have got to come along and get involved.
Oh, yeah,
don't think I'll be working out. I might just be a spectator. But during the last couple of weeks, and I think you're probably a perfect person to have on, you must be so excited that the 2020 Japan Olympics is going to have swimming and you could be swimming for Australia. Surfing, for Australia. I'm just watching the swimming as it goes on, Sal, sorry.
Oh, no, that's all right. It's been Olympic fever. How good is it? It's like the body clock just wakes up and you know as soon as like you're waking up, it's prime time over there in Rio. And it's like an automatic response and press the remote. And it's like you're waking up to some amazing Olympic moment. And it's just getting me more and more amped to chase my own Olympic dream. And for sure, I'll be doing everything to qualify for 2020. And it's just a huge milestone for our sport.
Sal, I've got a couple of questions to put to you here and a couple of theories as well about surfing the Olympics. Firstly, I've always thought that if the pinnacle of your sport is to win an Olympic gold medal, then your sport is well and truly entitled to be in the Olympics. So the golfers at the moment, a lot haven't turned up. They would rather win a Masters, I think, than Olympic gold medal. Would you rather win a world title, which you've been close to so many times, or an Olympic gold medal?
It's an interesting discussion, Howie. It's one that I think that there's pros and cons for both sides. I think an Olympic dream for surfing is something that, especially with the introduction of the wave pool technology, it just gives us another avenue. I really think it gives you a really holistic view of the sport. And I think the world title, being crowned as world champion, will always sit as the most prestigious accolade you can receive. But I think we've had, in that underlying grassroots, we've always had the ISA World Surfing Games. So that's always been our Olympic style where it opens it up to more countries. And it's just so elite on the WSL Tour that a lot of these other countries don't really have a crack. So we'd really love to unearth this in that Olympic Games sort of arena. And all the surfers I've spoken to, they want to walk out in an opening ceremony and wear the green and gold. So I think we would be all for it as a sport.
Yeah, I actually think it's fantastic. Obviously, I'm a bit biased because I love the surfing and I can't wait to see
it. Harry thinks he's a chance.
No, I don't think I'm a chance. I'm nowhere near. I wouldn't mind commentating it though, Fev. I wouldn't mind commentating if there's any gigs there. Now, Sal, I put it to the boys last week. I was away and I crossed to them and we were chatting about it. Summer in Japan, probably not the best waves unless you get typhoons. I put it to the boys. And I don't know if this has actually been discussed yet, but I think it's a perfect time for them to have the event in a wave pool so you know locked in when the final's going to be. It can be under lights. That's just my theory. I think it's a great chance for surfing to go to a whole nother level in that area. Do you think wave pool? Do you think in the ocean? What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, I definitely think it could be an amazing chance to sort of bring that that technology in quite seamlessly. And it's going to be tough going for conditions wise, and we're in a sport that is it's tough. It gets fickle at times, and you would be hoping that it's a few days of amazing waves, but I know there's still discussions going on, but I know they've locked in that they're going to be in the natural elements. We see these wave pools popping up everywhere, and it's just getting more and more exciting. So I think there's room for all different things that are coming out in surfing. I really think there's a a great way to display all of it and keep, you know, that authenticity to surf. And we're always going to be, you know, fighting it out for our world title crown. But there could be a stop, you know, out of Waiful. Could be in America. It could be in Dubai. We can go inland and really open up the floodgates to surfing to a broader community.
Yeah, I'm really all for Howie for the indoor.
Well, I think
I'm scared of sharks.
That's
great. Perfect for me.
That thing that Slater built, Sal, you just imagine an Olympics and you know at 8 p.m. on a Sunday night you'll have the gold medal match between, you know, Sally Fitzgibbons and Steph Gilmore. It's locked in. It's ready to go. Talking about Steph, etc., as we let you go, you're sitting fifth in the world title rankings at the moment. You've been so close so many times. I think Tyler Wright's leading at the moment. See, she's about 12,000 in front of you, but still plenty of points up for grabs for the rest of the season. How are you placed?
Oh, I'm loving the challenge at the moment, Howie. It's one that, you know, every heat is so competitive, and vying for these event wins is, you know, it is getting tougher and tougher, but I'm just persevering. You know, I've had those a couple of calls this year that, you know, I would have loved to capitalise on making that quarterfinal a semi and that semi a final, but we've had two final showings, and in this next leg of events, we go over to the US again and then over to Europe with France and Portugal. So I do fancy myself in the beach break sort of conditions and try and use that to my advantage and just hunt this win first and foremost, get a couple of event wins under my belt. But, yeah, the hunger's still there. It's burning, the desire, and especially with all this Olympic fever going around. I'm going over there with a lot of energy and hopefully breakthrough for a win.
And speaking about the state cell, that the young American in the 800 metres is smashing the world record with 100 metres to swim. She's a full pool length in front of everyone else.
Katie Ledecky, you're talking about. She's a star, as are you, Sal. Good luck with the Fitzgibbons International. Good luck jumping on the WSL. And I could think of nothing better than seeing you surfing at the Olympics in 2020.
And we would love to see everyone come down to Cronulla Shores. We're going to be down there November 3rd to the 6th. Huge beach festival, something for everyone in the family. So thanks so much for your time, guys.
Good on you, Sal. We really appreciate your time.
Cheers.
Great to speak to Sally Fitzgibbons. Katie Ledecky is leading. I told you, Feb, I thought she'd win by 25 metres. Let's go to Basil and Gian. This is the closing stages of the 800 free.
The world champion, she's the world record holder, and can she do it again? It's lucky 13, another world record for Katie Ledecky. Lottie Fries sprinting for the line, Carlin's there as well, the close go for silver, Carlin gets it, Kappas third, and Jess Ashwood, well done, terrific finish from Jess. She finishes in fifth position.
Jess Ashwood, the Australian. So I told you she'd win by 25 metres. What do you reckon she won by?
She won by about 35, I reckon.
Absolutely smashing. Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Brendan Favola. Heath Scotland to join us after 11. Now Jake Edwards has walked in. Feb, it's a former teammate festy for
you
today.
It is. It's a Carlton off. And Jakey now, you know, he's strutting his craft down at the Cattery and the twos down there and the VFL and going very well. You look good. Geez, you look good.
Thanks, mate. I feel pretty good. Yeah, it's good
to be
back.
It's a big watch.
Big watch, it is.
Have a look at that bling.
Bit of bling, mate.
It's a bit of ring. That's a ring action. That's straight from the wet. You should have come with me to the Caribbean, my boy. You would have been fine. Now, Jakey, just give us a brief rundown on your story. You're a man that grew up as a very talented athlete. You went down to Carlton with Fev. It'd be fair to say you had some issues footy and life. We don't need to go into that in enormous detail here, but you've had your tough times. You're here as a fit and healthy young man today, but it hasn't always been that way for you.
Yeah, that's right, Mark. So I got drafted at the age of 17, which is an amazing experience, mate, as you could imagine. Got to walk in and rub shoulders with a great man to the right here. I won't talk him up too much, but he was probably one of the better players that I've played alongside.
Jake, he doesn't have talking himself up.
He had
some
talent. So things started changing for me, mate. I guess behaviourally, started noticing some changes, which is quite frustrating. Motivational levels, getting out of bed was really, really difficult at times. And finding myself, growing up, I was a bit of a confident lad, growing up on a farm and things like that. And I didn't really want to be around the football club too much. I just wanted to get home and just really do nothing. And things for me came to a bit of a crossroad. And I actually quit the footy club at the age of when I was late 19 and went back home to the farm. And Roddy Ashman was the welfare guy at the time, and he actually came back, you know, came out to the farm and sat around the table and went back to the club and spoke to Dr. Ben Baresi, who was a doctor at the time, and I was diagnosed with depression, mate, at that time, which, you know, at 19 was pretty confronting. Being in a football environment as well was something that I was, at that time, just wanted to push aside and get on with my AFL career, which is probably the stupidest thing I did.
Mm.
You know, looking back now, and then just suppressed it and didn't acknowledge exactly, how to handle it and how to move forward, which, you know, probably brought me to my knees a little bit later on in life, with the suicide attempt and things like that as well. So, yeah, but now I find myself here today, mate, and like you said, down at the Cattery, second chance at football, and, you know, really enjoying myself.
Did you feel a bit of pressure? Because your old man, Big Butch, played a lot of footy. And did you find a bit of pressure knowing that he played a lot of EFL games and then you being the son of Butch coming into an AFL club and you know, trying to meet that expectation?
Yeah, I did, mate. It was probably, it wasn't just the old man. People probably don't understand my family history in football as well. Like, my great-grandfather played over 100 games. My grandfather played at the Bulldogs over 100 games, played in the Premiership. And then was my old man, plus Shane O'Bree's my cousin as well. So I had a bit of a legacy there.
Good
to
pecking
live up
order,
to.
Howie.
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. And I did feel the pressure, mate. But internally, it was probably driven more. I think the expectation I had on myself was to become nothing less than a 100-game player. So when I was experiencing these behavioural issues myself, and motivational levels weren't matching the expectation that I had upstairs in the mind, it was quite confronting, and the only way I could handle it, mate, was to distance myself from everyone and everything, and the culture, with the football you hear about a lot, binge drinking and things like that would lead into other issues and that as well. So I did feel the pressure, mate, growing up, but mum and dad were always super supportive, but there were a few times that you do think, geez, I wish their last name was a little bit different at times, but that's just the way it was, mate. And I was grateful for the opportunity that I got at the Carlton Football Club.
Jakey, your story, and people need to check out the website betteroutthanin.com.au, and we might actually keep you around for another break and have a chat about that. But as you said, and it's really not a forum at this time of the morning to go too far into this, but you did have an attempt on your life. You went through a really difficult time. You had issues with drug abuse now. Mm-hmm. Looking back on that time in your life, how do you reflect on it?
Yeah, it's a great question, mate. I guess how I reflect on that period of my life is I guess I kind of use that now as motivation as to finding a bit of a purpose as to what I do today. And I spend a lot of my time now going around and speaking and working one-on-one with a lot of young adults across Australia and supporting them around their own challenges and issues from drugs and alcohol right through to the suicide and depression. So I think looking back, at times when I do talk about it, it does emotionally, still has that little bit of an imbalance within myself. But I think I've got to use it now to use my brand, I guess, and to get the message out as much as I can. And being a part of Better Out Than In, it gives me the opportunity to get around and actually, talk more about it.
We'll discuss Better Out Than In next with Jake Edwards, Mark Howard, Brendan Favola on the Dead Set Legends on Triple M. Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Brendan Favola. A minute to go in the third in the basketball. USA lead Serbia 71-60. Of course, after the Olympics finishes, the Paralympics come around.
I love the Paralympics.
Yeah, and our next guest, she is a star, this lady. Dealt with her a lot with the swimming team. Four-time Olympic gold medalist at the London Games. Her name is Ellie Cole. She's a good Victorian girl. She joins us now. Hello, Ellie.
Morning, boys. How are you? Happy Saturday.
Oh, great. Oh, and lovely to speak to you. Firstly, before we get to the Paralympics, what do you love watching about the Olympics at the moment? Has it captured your attention, Ellie?
Absolutely. I'm obviously very an avid sports fan, and the Olympics is one of my favourite things. I'm glued to the television at the moment, up at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch the swimming, and then after the swimming session's finished, I'm off to the pool myself to finish off my training session heading into Rio.
Isn't it bizarre how you become an expert, Ellie, in all sorts of sports? I was sitting in an airport two nights ago thinking I was an expert on women's sevens rugby when I'd never seen it before, and all of a sudden I think I know what I'm talking about.
Well, I think just the general Australian community is like that, actually.
I was like that with the archery. How do you not get it in the 10? You're at the Olympics. They're getting eights and sevens, but that must be so hard. But anyway, so you're off. When are you off to Rio, Al?
We actually head off to Alabama next week. So we're following the same footsteps as the Australian Olympic swim team. So we head off to Alabama for a last-minute training camp, and then we'll head off into Rio at the beginning of next month.
And London was such a special time for you, Ellie, but just following the swimming world a little bit, you've had a pretty tough time. Have you had a couple of shoulder issues, a couple of recos even?
Yeah, I think once you're in a sport for a long time, your body does start breaking down a little bit. So after London, I went through two shoulder reconstructions, and being a leg amputee with that wasn't very fun. I had one working limb left. So I made sure that, you know, I recovered those shoulders as best as I could for Rio. And they're looking really good heading into the games. I'm happy with how they've gone.
Yeah, Ali, Howie wouldn't know about your body getting a bit tired once you get a bit older and, you know, when you do sport, because he's never played sport before. But anyway, we won't talk about that.
I'm sure he gets off the couch every now and then.
Every year.
And to be honest, Ali, after a big 6 weeks in the West Indies in the gym, if I took my shirt off now, Fev, I think you'd be pretty impressed by what you say. Ali, we shouldn't be involving you in this conversation. Ask your question, Brendan.
She wants to off. So with your shoulders, you must have a good surgeon, because you're the world record holder in the backstroke.
That was a very surprising world record, actually. You know, it's funny how much, I guess, your mental state can play with you heading into a race. And I think we've seen that at the Olympics with the Olympic swim team. You know, going into that race, I was really relaxed because, like I said, I've had two shoulder reconstructions, so I completely took the expectations off and swam faster than I ever have before. It's amazing.
You said you watched the swimming this morning. The Campbell sisters went out and swam in the 53, and they both qualified for the semis. How do you think their mindset would have been, you know, the night before, first and second favourite, and they both didn't get a medal?
Yeah, good question. You know, obviously the Olympics is a very tough arena, and we're seeing plenty of Olympians and world record holders that are coming fifth and sixth in their events, and it all comes down to the pressure. And I think, you know, heading into finals, we're seeing a lot of swimmers getting a little bit too excited and a bit ahead of themselves, and it's showing in their races. So it's a big learning curve for me, you know, watching the Olympics, and, you know, I'm already trying to mentally prepare myself for my races in Rio. But the Campbell sisters, you know, they're doing a fantastic job. They're obviously doing the best job that they can, and I'm really proud of what they've done.
Ellie, sometimes I wish we streamed this show live in a Skype sense, because in the rare occasion someone says to Fev, good question, which you just did, his face just he's like a little puppy dog. He just absolutely loves it. How do you deal with the mental side of it? Because when you get to an Olympics, Ellie, as you well know, it's not about times. It's about being first on the wall, which is different to a lot of swimming events in some ways.
Yeah, well, every swimming event that we do, you know, we're focusing on times, trying to get the best that we can out of ourselves. But when you get to the Olympics, all of a sudden that focus shifts to medals. And I think that's where a lot of people get stuck. And you do have to remember that you are just diving into a swimming pool and doing something that you've done thousands of times before.
That's a great point.
Although there is, you know, thousands of people in the arena, you've somehow just got to switch that off and remember that you've done this a million times before and back yourself.
Ellie,
it's a difficult thing to do.
But you have proven four times in London that you know how to do it. May it all go well for you in Rio. Have a good time in Alabama and have a wonderful, wonderful Rio Games when you get there.
Yeah, thank you.
Good luck, Ellie.
Also, I just quickly want to mention that Optus are actually fundraising a campaign for us at the moment. So you can actually text a message to 1-999-8787 and text high five, and that will donate $5 to send the Paralympic team over to Rio.
Spot on, Ellie. I was remiss to not mention that. I'll just run that by you once more. 1-999-8787. That's 1-999-8787. Great to have Optus on board the high five campaign. You send it through, $5, and that helps out the Paralympians. Ellie, may it all go well for you. Thanks for having a chat with us.
Thank you, boys.
Great to speak to Ellie Cole, heading off to the Paralympics, four-time gold medalist from the London Olympics. Next.
She had a good point there.
Which was that?
When you get into the pool, it's just exactly what she's done, you know, 1,000 times before. Everyone's there watching, but they're always watching. It's a bit like when I ran out in the G in front of 90,000. Muscle memory. Bang. Thanks. Snags.
Thanks, Dawn Fraser. Greg Rust will join us next on the Dead Set Legends. I've been away, but nothing's changed. Triple M. Triple M's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howe, Brendan Favola, the Doggies 95, the Magpies 92. Great treat to have a little Bulldogs champion on the line by the name of Nathan Rovat. G'day, Nath.
G'day, guys.
Great to speak to you. Pretty tight affair last night. Really good win. Nice to bank the 4 points.
Yeah, it was. I mean, those close games aren't usually good for the heart, but I guess it was a good spectacle for a Friday night.
Bontempelli, 3 votes. We were discussing earlier on the show whether there wouldn't be many sort of under 23-year-old players in the comp that you'd pick before him. He is an unbelievable player, your man.
Oh, he's a superstar. He's the character of the guy's unbelievable. He'd be about 6'3" midfielder who can go forward and play as a key forward. So I don't think there's many of those types of guys floating around the comp. So it's pretty special to have him as a teammate.
Mate, there's a lot of talk around about Bob Murphy's captaincy next year, and I think he's the one to lead you guys into the future. But what's your thoughts? Do you think there's a couple of up-and-coming players, or just Bob's the man?
Personally, I think Bob's the man. He's over the last couple of years, especially when I guess Griff left at the end of 2014, he sort of stepped in and hasn't looked back since then. But as you said, there's a couple of guys. I mean, Easton Woods done just a terrific job stepping in for Bob this year, and Bonte's, I think, done it on a couple of occasions as well, which he'll be a super leader down the track. But I think Bob, a refreshed Bob next year will be a really scary sight.
Speaking to Nathan Robat on the Dead Set Legends, Nath, I've been away, but I did read a few articles and saw the incident with Mitch Wallace, and all our thoughts are with him, and I'm sure he's already into recovery mode. But a lot of discussions about how difficult it was for the boys to come into the rooms and hear the reaction of Mitch and see the pain that he was in, one of your really good mates.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously Mitch is a really integral part of the team, and to see a mate, I mean, go down with such a horrific injury and to still be in the rooms after the game was pretty traumatic for the boys. And I mean, Mitch is on a really healthy road to recovery now, which is really good, and he's around the club and being really vibrant. But at that time, I mean, yeah, especially after the loss, it probably just makes it that little bit more sour.
Now, Nath, I like to sort of find out a little bit of background before I speak to footballers. And speaking to a few guys I know at your footy club, and I said, yeah, tell me about Nathan Robat. And a couple of them came back and said, yeah, most annoying teammate. Why would that be, Nath?
It's probably pretty accurate, to be honest. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. But, yeah, I'd love to. Who are the names?
No. I can't name.
Can't reveal the source.
Hey, we're a bit tight for time, Nath. Before we let you go, and we appreciate your time, I know you're a big soccer fan, but if you could compete in one event at the Olympics, what's Nathan Robat going to be in?
Ooh, I mean, you'd love to go there. I've been watching a fair bit of the swimming. The 100-metre swim would be pretty cool, but I reckon the 100-metre sprint, the earth track, but I don't reckon you could get anywhere near Usain Bolt, but that'd be pretty cool if you could compete in one of those events.
No, you're a talented footballer, mate, but I don't think you're getting anywhere near Usain Bolt. Nath, we appreciate your time. Good luck going into finals, mate.
Good luck, mate.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Nathan Robat on the Dead Set Legends on Triple M.
This is Dead Set Legends brought to you by Harvey Norman. Now, we've got our great man, the number one man, Mark Howard, back from his Caribbean trip, but didn't all go to plan, Howie.
There was a few issues along the way in the West Indies. I went to the Bob Marley Museum in Jamaica, which was really, really cool. Things are a little bit different over there. So I did the footy here on a Sunday arvo with Barry Denner and Campbell Brown, and then did the MotoGP or an F1 Grand Prix that night, and then got on a plane and went Melbourne to Sydney to Los Angeles to New York to Panama City, to Guyana. It took me 44 hours to get there. Got there at lunchtime and had to do a game that night.
Poor.
And you don't know any of the guys you're working with. You don't even meet them before. I didn't know Damian Martin or Mike Haseman, Darren Ganga, these guys. So the first time you meet them is in commentary. So you want to get off to a good start. So you do segments there. You do five overs and then have a spell and then come back and do another five overs. So my first five overs in the Caribbean Premier League, I sit in their box next to Damian Martin, who I've never met before. And Fev, it was a real sharp five overs. I thought, I've nailed that. I get off air, turn around, the producer says, yeah, we had a problem with the satellite. None of that first five overs went to air. So my first five overs on debut in the Caribbean Premier League didn't go to air. So I've done overs 1-5. So then I've got to do overs 10-15.
Pear-shaped.
And this is with Darren Ganga, who used to play test cricket for the West Indies. He was at a different hotel, so I've never, ever met him before. I sit down. He sits down at the start of 10.1 overs. Daz, great to have you here. They're going along pretty nicely. Yes, Howard, they're going well. My name was Howard. And I've looked at him strangely thinking, so next ball comes in, you know, Gale whips it away through mid-wicket. They come back for a second. Gee, Daz, Ganga looks good. Well, Howard, he's in fantastic form.
Oh, no.
Mardo's in the back of the box, absolutely wetting himself. So I
let him know?
Well, I did, but not until the end of the five-over spell when he called me Howard about 9 times and my phone is lighting up from mates going, mate, he doesn't even know who you are at all. We got to Florida, talking about things not going exactly right. So they played a week in Florida at an actual cricket ground. Commentary box, you could see the pitch and nothing else. So as soon as they hit the ball off the square, you couldn't see a thing. So a guy skies it out to mid-wicket. You don't know if the fielder's there. So it's like calling the footy, only being able to see the centre square.
Well, you did a great job when it was over there in the States, because I actually listened and watched in, and you wouldn't have known that.
Well, that's good to know. A couple of other things you need to keep an eye out for as a young cricket commentator going to the West Indies. Sabina Park, which is in Kingston, Jamaica. Now, all those things you hear about, well, let's be honest, you know that they've got, stereotypically, that they've got
a gas mask.
Fantastic runners, yes, and that they don't mind having the old hoochie-coochie occasionally. Now, if you go into the equivalent of the Bay 13 at Sabina Park, so you go out for your four-over spell, and I'd love to go and sit in the crowd to watch. Three overs in, I thought, I've got to leave here because, you know, the old passive smoking, I'm going to come back into the commentary box. I'm not even going to know my own name, so you've got to keep an eye out for that. A couple of other things to watch out for, handshakes. Damien Fleming said to me, before you go, Howie, don't shake anyone's hand in the West Indies. Just put your hands in your pockets.
Why is that?
Well, there's a couple of things. You know, in our culture, you're taught as a young man to look someone in the eye and give a good firm handshake.
Yep.
The West Indians are real wet fish jobs, but they bring all these variations into the handshake. There's slaps and tickles and knuckle, and you don't know whether it's a traditional handshake, whether it's a knuckle, whether it's an arm slap.
The awkwardness if you went for a different...
I got one with Chris Gayle so wrong.
Oh, no.
You know where the fingers don't disconnect? I went for the full handshake and he went for the knuckle. You got to keep an eye out for that. But just in summary, I don't think we realise how big a stars Bravo and Gayle are in that part of the world. When Chris Gayle walks out to bat at Sabina Park, they won the entire tournament.
Well, can you run me through when you saw him about 7:30 next morning?
They won the tournament in St Kitts, so I toddled off to bed at midnight and had my half a light beer, as I do to celebrate the end of the tournament, and I shut down. I went to go for a swim the next morning, so I had a swim in the ocean. I was coming back through the resort at the Marriott in St Kitts, and there is Chris Gayle. You know those photos he sends on Instagram?
Yep.
He's there, so it's 8:30 in the morning, shirt off. He's got the world's biggest cocktail in one hand. He's got a hat on, sunnies, and the biggest cigar you've ever seen. And I walked past him. He obviously hasn't been to bed, and he's just like, hey, man. What do you say? You just say, hey, man, back. You don't, like,
did you give him a hey, man, back?
You just say, g'day, mate. And he's like, good, man. And that's it. So
that's a highlight.
It was, mate, it was a fantastic trip. Great people over there. Yeah, yeah.
He goes, hey, mate. Hey, Howard.
Yeah, no. Hey, well, man. I think we got over the whole incident that happened in the Big Bash. So, but thanks to Darren Ganger out there, who my first five overs on air called me Howard the whole time. A lot to get through in the next hour of the show. Sally Fitzgibbons, Heath Scotland, and plenty more.
Well, it was big news when you were away, mate. Surfing's going to be in the 2020.
Isn't that fantastic? No, I am not. But Sally Fitzgibbons is. We'll talk to her about that on the Dead Set Legends Mon on Triple. The Glem's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Brendan Favola. Fev, the TradingPost.com, EJ Witten's Legend Game, Eddie Had Stadium, Friday, September 2, broadcast live on 7 and Fox. Are you involved?
Yeah, no, I'm not playing, mate. I'm actually doing the commentary for Channel 7.
So are you now, Brendan?
With Triple M Zone, the big Briss, and Luke Darcy. So be sitting there critiquing some of my old teammates and players that I played against. And one person I'm looking forward to commentating is the balded one, Heathy Scotland.
Who is on the line now. Hello, Heathcliff.
G'day, Howie. Big Sammy, how are you, boys?
Great to speak to you. Do you think the big man will be kind about you when he slips into commentary on the Seven Network as you have a run around?
Not at all. Not at all. But I'll tell you what, at least he won't be screaming at anyone for not kicking to him. He plays it when he's done the last few years, like he's going to get drafted again.
I like it, Heathy. Hey, the Victorian squad, coached by Timmy Watson, Danny Frawley, an assistant, Barry Hall, Brad Sewell, Campbell Brown, Derm, yourself, John O'Brien, captain, Schwatter's having a run around. What a wonderful celebration of footy and a great opportunity to play a game with some, well, legends, let's be honest.
Yeah, last year was my first game of it, and I had an absolute ball. It was fantastic to rub shoulders with some of the game's great names and blokes that I'd watched on TV or only played against. So it was a really fun night and really enjoyed it. Looking forward to this year. But again, but I suppose the biggest thing is obviously to raise awareness for prostate cancer, and it's a fantastic initiative. You know, 20,000 Australian men diagnosed with prostate cancer each year, and one in nine men in their lifetime. So it's a great... great forum for us to raise awareness and it's a fantastic opportunity to be part of it.
Yeah, it is, Scotto. Well said, mate. But the best thing about this game is to watch, you know, players that are out of nick and they haven't been. But you've been playing footy, so you're still in pretty good nick.
Pretty
you did
good,
come man. Over to my house a couple of weeks ago and gave me a bit of crap about my my sore shoulder, which happened to be broken, sternum, but I still cooked your dinner.
You did a lovely dinner, mate, a couple of bottles of red, but yeah, I didn't think it was a serious one until I found it. Apologise about that. But yeah, look, it is great to see a few body shapes change a little bit. The hair gets thinner, a few blokes joining me. So, look, yeah, it's a bit of fun. And look, it's fantastic for the for the fans to be able to watch. I think with the scheduling this year too and the week off on Friday night, look, it's going to be a great day.
Hey, Heathy, just stand by because Michael Phelps has just dived in the 100-metre butterfly. Chad Leclos is the fastest qualifier. Just hold on, Heathy. We'll just cross now to Basil and Gian. Thanks, Channel 7.
Chad Leclos, but schooling down the pool the first time, is the leader. And Phelps just a little behind that group in the middle of the field. So schooling, the 21-year-old.
What is it, 100?
In the final of the men's 100 fly, he leads them all back home.
Very fast out, great reaction time off the blocks. 23.64 at the first 50, Joseph Schooling. Can he hang on here? Watch lane two, here comes Michael Phelps.
Michael Phelps gets to work. He's out chasing more history. It's his own history. Schooling in front here. I don't think Phelps can get him. Singapore is going to get its first swimming medal, and it's gold. An Olympic record. Oh. Michael Phelps finishes second in a tie for second, a three-way tie Singapore. For second. Wow, can you believe that? As if he didn't need a little bit.
Surely the headline in the Singapore Straits Times tomorrow is Singapore Sling. They get their first Olympic gold medal in the pool. Phelps tied for second for silver in his last individual swim. So he's got a couple of medals to come. Heath, you're still there?
I am, mate, yeah.
He's gone, yeah, thanks for that.
We're all over the Olympics, aren't we, brother?
No, why wouldn't you be? Fantastic. What a man Phelps is, eh? He's phenomenal.
Yeah, he is a freak. Now, listen, some of the guys you're playing against, Andrew McLeod, Jason Ackermanis, Wayne Carey, this is in the EJ Witten Legends game, Peter Matera. You must be playing against some guys that you just watched on the football field thinking these guys are absolutely incredible at what they do.
Oh, certainly. Guys I idolised and certainly still do. I'll be nice and nervous being alongside them. Don't worry about that. Yeah, look, it's, again, like I said, fantastic opportunity. Great chance for us to raise awareness. And, you know, I love the concept and looking forward to playing.
Heath, take us into the Carlton rooms when the Feb was in his heyday. Just take us through what he used to do to prepare and whether he was confident or lacking confidence. what was the build-up like?
Well, I think we all know he didn't lack in any confidence. it was good to share the rooms with him because we couldn't share the 50 with him. He kicked us all out of his 50.
It was good to share the rooms with him because we couldn't share the 50 I like that, Heath.
Scotto, we used to have an old saying, didn't we, with the amount of people at...
There was a period, I can't remember what year it was, it might have been a bit of coincidence, or it might have been Fev actually deliberately doing it, but I remember one game, I think we played Essendon, there was about 80,000, he arrogantly came up and said, I'll kick 8 today, 80,000, every 10,000 people I'll kick a goal. Funny enough, the next 6 weeks, the trend follows, we kicked 9, 7, 3 when we had a low crowd.
We played in the Gold Coast and there was about 20,000 there, I said to Scotto, I'll probably only kick 2 today. Not many people here. I don't need to pull out the big guns today. Kick 2 when he come up to me and said, you're not well, mate.
Yeah, certainly didn't lack any confidence, Brendan. But look, he was a great teammate, great mate, and loved playing with him.
Now, Heath, as we let you go, are you still rocking the personalised number plates on the car?
Come on.
Is that a true story or not?
No, he's making it up.
Right.
I've got a text message from Scotty Cummings saying, I had to find that bloke every single week at Collingwood Football Club because he had his own, he used to rock up in his Datsun Commodore, no, his Datsun 180 with Scotto written on the number plates. True story?
Maybe a bit of truth to that.
We all live and learn, Heath. The EJ Witten's Legend Game Trading Post will bring it to you. You can get tickets at afl.com.au/legendsgame, Channel 7, and Fox will be covering it with Fev on the mic. Hey, good luck, Heath. Thanks for having a chat and thanks for having a spell in the middle there while Michael Phelps did his thing.
Good luck today, mate.
I count you, Heath, on the same sort of pillar as athlete as Michael Phelps.
Sam, what have you been drinking?
He's been gunja.
Yeah, I just got back from Jamaica, man. Thanks, Heath. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, fellas.
Plenty to come on the Dead Set Legends.
Hey, the Singapore News just said Joseph Schooling Phelps.
Well, that's not bad.
Thanks.
Under that, did it say Singapore Sling?
Maybe.
Dead Set Legends. Yeah, Olympic coverage discussion coming up next on Triple M. Glem's Dead Set Legends for Harvey Norman, Mark Howard and Brendan Favola. It's a funny old job. 3 days ago, I'm hanging with Chris Garr. Now I have to speak to Geeg Rust on the line. Two more different men you couldn't get. Hello, Thruster.
Welcome back, Mon. Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you, Mon. A lot happening in the world of most. Firstly, how are you, great man?
Fantastic. I'm even better for your digital experience now, mate. You're becoming the Facebook guru. You're everywhere.
Well, mate, just check it out at MarkHoward03 in case you miss it. MarkHoward03.
No one follows him, Rusty.
It's been an interesting world, Rusty, Facebook. But nevertheless, talking about Facebook, I saw photos of you popping up during the week. You were launching the Bathurst 1000. I think Bev Brock was up there as well. It looked like a pretty good affair, Thruster.
It was a really good day, Howard, for a couple of different reasons. So Bev Brock made mention at the time that she thinks that Peter's record of 9 wins in 1,000 can be beaten or at least equaled by Craig Lowndes, which is massive. Right. So Lowndes has 6 at the moment. She thinks he's absolutely... I mean, Peter mentored him and they did some great things together. And Craig, even to this day, has massive respect for the King. And he said, look, you know, it's a record that's there. I think he feels like to do it, it would probably be in the latter years of his career and maybe he could still pick up a few as an endurance driver. But that was a huge story on the day. And the other one too, guys, is that the girls are back, the Harvey Norman Supergirls, so Renee Gracie and Simona Di Silvestro. And some talk that, you know, James Warburton, the boss of supercars, has made no secret that he'd like a full-time female racer in the category. And some trying to join the dots, wondering whether Simona Di Silvestro may be that driver.
Yeah, she's obviously very, very talented steerer, Thruster, and it'd be fantastic for the sport. Mentioning Craig Lowndes and Peter Brock, Fev, Craig Lowndes, more than any other athlete I've ever dealt with, when he comes up to you to a post-race interview, you can't tell from his demeanour, if you hadn't watched the race, whether he came first or last. And he's also continually the last man in the back of the pits signing autographs, which he always says
he's
he got
a great
from,
man.
It's what he says he gets from got from the great Peter Brock, Thruster. Just that ability and understanding of how important the fans are.
And it's naturally him. When you deal with him away from the camera, it's the same guy. Yeah. You know, he's just very, very good, very giving like that. And I love the fact, Howie, while you're overseas, he won the last race of the weekend at Queensland Race. So, I mean, he's driving like some of the youngsters in our sport at the moment, and that's what makes it so great.
Nate, the F1 and the supercars are in a mid-season break, but the MotoGP's in Austria this week. And Valentino Rossi, a bit worried about the safety there.
You'll see it on 1:30
yeah,
Sunday night.
You'll be commentating, whatever.
Fantastic, can't wait.
You boys know that the Phillip Island round here in Australia has typically been the circuit that's had the highest average speed of any round they go to on the calendar, and that looks like being eclipsed this weekend. Some of the numbers suggest that the circuit in Austria could change that. But they've upgraded the venue. It's the first time that the World Championship's been there since 97. Formula One only returned in recent years as well. So it's gone through some upgrades. It's got some tarmac runoff and things like that. And Rossi's just worried that the combination of that style of runoff with the high speed, he wants them to address for the future years when the sport comes back continues to stage round there. He just wants some motorcycle style safety introduced for the riders.
Now, Rusty, with the F1s on break, as I said, you know, Daniel Ricciardo, I've been following him on Instagram and Twitter. You'd think that he'd just stay away from a car, head to the beach. He's in America driving around in some flash classic cars from state to state. He loves it.
That's him, yeah. I mean, he's a genuine, and both bikes as well, guys. It's not uncommon for him to be talking about MotoGP or particularly Supercross and Motocross. He likes the two-wheeled stuff as well. So, yeah, anytime he can get away from it and have a bit of fun in cars like that, he does. And Dan's, you know, that's all good. During the month off from the sport, that kind of thing's great for him because he's had a couple of podiums now. There's a bit of energy, a bit of spring back in the step, and that'll be good for him going into the second half of the championship, that's for sure.
You're a good man, Thruster. Always wonderful to chat with you.
See you, boys.
See you, mate.
A lot to come. After 11 o'clock, Sally Fitzgibbons to talk all things surfing. Heath Scotland, a gentleman that you used to play football with. We're going to talk about the Olympic coverage. Jake Edwards will join us after 10 o'clock. I might take you behind the scenes in the West Indies and tell you a few things that didn't quite go to plan as well, my friend.
That'll be interesting.
Mark Howard doing the show by himself for the next 2 hours. Remember when we sat down to do this show and I said, this show, the whole basis of this show is to be a positive 3 hours?
Yeah, it has been for the last month.
I don't want you to lose
so
sight of that.
I don't want you to lose sight of that, Brendan,
because if you do,
Jude Bolton,
if you do, you'll go the way of the duck, quack, quack, out the door. There's all plenty more washed up footballers that can come in here and I can make look
That'd
good, my friend.
That'd be a blessing in disguise. A Saturday morning kills me.
All right, where's the number?
I'm quite happy not to turn up, mate.
Nick Rui. Rui's in. Dead Set Legends.
Triple M's Dead Set Legends podcast brought to you by King Size Laundry at Harvey Norman. With all the king size capacity models from all the big brands. Visit online or in store.